blades to protect you, while they try to dispossess you of the right to decide between wrong or right, to openly discuss what politicians hide. They want to keep their secret plans from the public eye. We gotta keep our fire burning, keep our spirits bright. We gotta rise up, rise up, rise up. Rise up, people, against the war. Rise up, people, against the war. Rise up, people, against the war. Rise up, people. Money got no children, and bombs ain't for building. Killing ain't no way to make a peaceful day, as all of God's children can easily explain. We gotta keep our fires burning, keep our spirits bright. Stand up and speak for what we know is right. We gotta rise up, rise up, rise up. Rise up, people, against the war. Rise up, people, against the war. Rise up, people, against the war. Rise up, people. Days ahead, kiss my children into bed. All across the planet, I see that everything is fine.
Yeah,
rise up, people, against the war. Rise up, people, against the war. Rise up, people, against the war. Rise up, people. We got the power and the will, and we'll do it for our children. For the warmongers and the corporate whores in the history books with the dinosaurs. I claim my power, I claim my rights, and no dirty tricks are gonna change my mind. I'm gonna rise up, rise up, rise up. Rise up, rise up, rise up. Rise up, people, against the war. 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 Rise up.
Thanks for listening to great speeches and interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. If you're just joining this program, we're listening to a new foreign policy with Tom Ashbrook, Barry Posen, and William C. Wolford. For more than a half a century, the United States has been the world's big global straddling superpower, but now new questions are being raised about whether the U.S. can still afford that role.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the call for a new, dramatically more modest foreign policy for the United States, an end to the global domination grand strategy, a new posture, lower, less expensive profile in the world. Barry Posen makes the case in the current issue of Foreign Affairs magazine. His essay is Pullback, the Case for a Less Activist Foreign Policy. And it comes at a time when we're seeing big turnover in the Obama administration on lots of security fronts. You can link to his essay at our website, onpointradio.org. And there's a rebuttal. William Wolforth is one of the co-authors there. He's with us right now from Dartmouth College. Rebuttal titled Lean Forward in Defense of American Engagement. You can link to that one at our website as well. Lots of response online. Gary says, kind of to your point, Barry, says, get over World War II. It was a fluke of history that the U.S. did some good there. Get rid of the whole idea of U.S. exceptionalism. Stop killing people. John says, if we have a new foreign policy that precludes perpetual military involvement in global bases, what would happen to our base economy? We're going to make washing machines and TV sets again? LOL, pipe dream. The bankers would never stand for that. Greg says, though, look around. He says, Iran and North Korea are on the verge of nukes. There's a new generation of radicalism sweeping through the Middle East. Al-Qaeda reemerging. We have embassies breached, murder of diplomats, hostages killed in mayhem looking at Algeria. He says, President Obama didn't address any of it, but he harkens back to JFK in his inaugural address. Maybe laying down the base for the strategy you're not so keen on now, Barry, but where JFK said, let every nation know we will pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe, to assure the survival and success of liberty. That sounds large and in charge. Wayne in Acton, Massachusetts, you're on the air with Barry Posen and Bill Wolforth.
I agree with Barry Posen. I think it is time to pull back. You know, I'm a Vietnam-era veteran myself. My concern is the concern that was expressed by one of your emailers, which is, you know, our military, our Defense Department, these are job creators. And, you know, even here in Massachusetts, when there was the likelihood of General Electric losing a jet engine contract, I think it was for the F-22,
okay.
Our own Senator Kerry was very upset about that.
Sure.
And I think that represents tremendous resistance to pulling back. You know, all these bases, all the jobs associated with them will be, I think, a lot of resistance to the pullback notion.
Let us pick up that point, Wayne, and thank you for your call. Barry Posen, Wayne's for it. He's for the pullback, but he says you will gut our economy as it is.
Well, I think, you know, there's a larger issue here. I mean, there's two questions. Was the wisdom of my strategy and the question of what is the political saleability of the strategy in the United States?
Mm-hmm.
What would make the country adopt it?
And well, not, and in this case, economic viability.
Yeah, economic viability. The United States has so many unmet needs, right, that would employ all kinds of high-tech workers, all kinds of construction workers. The amount of
Really? If that's true, why aren't they doing those jobs right now?
Because we're spending the money on something else. We can't get giant infrastructure budgets.
Corporate America has money stacked up to the ceiling. It's not spending on those other jobs.
We have huge public infrastructure investments to make. That's no different effect on the economy than a dollar spent in the defense
sector.
You're
talking federal funds.
Where is the ultimate source of the dollar that's spent in defense industry? It's the federal budget.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So highways, railroads, airports, rebuilding our energy infrastructure.
Go high-tech there instead of on the deck of an aircraft carrier.
There's a lot of good places mm-hmm. to spend a federal dollar. That's
mm-hmm.
that's not an issue, right? I think is not the principal concern. Now, there is a different way to think about it, which is you have large institutions that are dug in and make their money off military production, and those folk are going to...
Those
folk are great supporters of an activist grand strategy because it's in their interest, and somebody else may make the money in a different different kind of
expense. So people will yelp about it. Bill Walforth, does this factor into your resistance to this new strategy, that it upends the economy as it is today, or you don't really care about that?
Oh, no, I do care about it, but I think the big question really is when you have a country that's got a long-term strategy that's been working, the country's extremely successful, as Barry Posen rightly says, is it likely that you're going to convince a lot of people to simply take a big experiment? Let's try something radically different. Let's completely pull back from the world. Let's revoke a lot of these security commitments, and let's see what happens.
Well, we've done it before. We moved in a huge way that was ahistorical for the United States, avoiding, you know, entangling commitments and all that.
We did, and it didn't turn out so well. I just don't think it's that unusual that politicians are reluctant to run that experiment. I don't need to turn to special economic interests or the entrenched bureaucracies
mm-hmm.
or political special interests to explain why careful leaders with the best interests of the country at heart should decide to stick with a strategy, should decide to hold on to partnerships and alliances around the world.
But surely entropy itself isn't an argument for this. Just because we've done it for a long time now in a very big way, surely that can't mean that we don't learn as we go and change, even radically, if that's suggested by reality.
Definitely, if it's suggested by reality. For example, if it were really the case we couldn't afford it, if you just could not afford it, of course you'd have to do something else. But we obviously can afford it. I don't think anybody thinks that we can't. And then the question
I don't know
is,
about that. I mean, everybody's howling about debt in Washington. The military budget's a big piece of it.
Well, we have a debt because we spend a lot of money that we refuse to finance.
Including on the military.
Including on the military, although actually that is a part, but is only a part of the problem. The reason the country has a budget deficit is because it has the political system has been unwilling to extract the revenues necessary to pay for its current consumption. The largest piece of that is various entitlements, but part of it is also defense. I don't think anyone thinks that the country is incapable of sustaining a strong defense and also sustaining its commitments to its population in old age. That's really a domestic political question.
Well it is, but that is actively debated right now. I must say, I want to get another caller here. Gary in Middletown, Rhode Island. Gary, you're on the air.
Tom, hi. Okay,
hi.
In large part, I agree with Mr. Posen, in large part. But there's a model for us, and you've touched on it too, and it's been scraped on a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
After the First World War, we mobilized, we got involved, we tipped it in the direction we wanted to tip it in, and then we demobilized. We got uninvolved. A few years later, our incredibly sophisticated European cousins, I'm sure they're sophisticated because that's the opinion about us. We're not. Completely got the world in a huge mess. We shut down everything. We quit making Buicks. We started making tanks, put the women in the factories, put the men in the uniform, and we went off and we settled things down.
World War II. Okay.
World War II. The World War II is what, and then after that, you ask, why are we in NATO? Why are we here? Why are we there? Because if we're not there, we, for better or worse, we are the guarantors of what passes for peace nowadays, and for sure, stability in the world. It is us. How can anyone have any level of confidence that we will not have to do the same thing again if things get enormously out of balance?
Gary, that is the big question. I'm sure comes to many people's minds. We'll put it straight to Barry Posen.
Well, I mean, the United States may have to do it again if things become grossly out of balance. But the question is, in what parts of the world today is there a risk of things becoming grossly out of balance, right? Does anyone seriously look at Europe today and think, oh, geez, this is a place that's teetering on the edge of a third or a fourth world war? It's not, right? There are a bunch of countries of modest size, many of them defended with nuclear weapons. And there's no great risk there. And I think we're intelligent enough to be able to tell where in the world there's a risk of things going to hell.
Okay, but it wouldn't have to be Europe.
Where they are.
And China. They've been in each other's teeth just in the last few weeks.
I think that's right. And so this raises a different set of questions, right? Which is, I mean, Bill seems to think that the world is going swimmingly with all of this American presence. Well, the Asia that I look at is an Asia that doesn't look like it's going so swimmingly. So what, there's, again, all of these things are two-edged swords. American alliances, and the Americans are crazy concerned about the credibility of their commitments to allies. So we work really hard to make them credible. We ask what the allies want. We give them what they want.
Well, if you're going to have them, they ought to be credible, right? If you're going to have them.
Right, but it's not just making them credible to our adversaries. It's making them credible to our allies. And our allies just pretend to us that they're desperately concerned.
Free
riders. And so here we are talking, having a debate in this country about huge cuts, right, in spending on our people, right?
Yeah.
But we're going to continue to spend lots of resources on defense so that Europeans and Japanese can continue to spend money on their people. This is a transfer payment. This is welfare for the rich. The United States defense budget is welfare for the rich.
For other rich countries. Bill Warforth, what do you say to that, Bill?
It's more complicated than that. Look, we came out of the end of the Cold War with a very, very potent military establishment, a lot of assets in the world, and we decided, hey, we said to our allies, hey, look, why don't we hold on to these assets? We do this really well, and we'll handle some of the high-end military stuff. You guys do some of the other stuff. I admit there may be a trace of free riding here or there, but if you really look at some of these cases, you'll find actually the Allied contribution is pretty substantial. It just shows up in less headline-grabbing ways than the high-tech air power that the United States dominates. For example, if you measure the contribution of allies, for example, in Afghanistan, controlling for the size of these countries, the number of casualties suffered and the monetary costs controlled for the size of these countries, it turns out the distribution of burdens is relatively fair. Similarly, after the Balkan wars of the 1990s, we did a lot of the high-end headline-grabbing airstrikes. The Europeans later came in and did the boring work of peacekeeping and democracy building and police
enough,
force.
But you still do have that number of the U.S. spending more than everybody else put together, you know, way down the list of nations. Our time grows short, and I wish it weren't. Larry in Scarborough, Maine. Larry, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. I am a true Libra. I am in agreement with both of your guests.
Okay.
First of all, I'd love to see us come back home. And, yes, I'm sure we would find other places to spend our money, such as infrastructure and teachers and nurses and so on. As for your other guest, your New Hampshire guest, says, you know, if we're not there, there's more turmoil. I kind of agree with that. I would love to see, for example, in Syria, where the heck is the United Arab League? You know, the Arabs, they want to be leaders. They want to be respected. Come on. You can't even handle one of your own countries murdering 60,000 of its own people.
Larry, our time is short. Let me pick it up right there. Barry Posen, you hear the call. If we weren't there, and we're not in Syria, but the Arab League isn't either, would other coalitions step up to kind of keep the peace if the U.S. weren't there on the block?
First of all, I think we have to return the discussion to America's national interests, right? Mm-hmm. So often these discussions elide what the United States needs for its security and what are some of the benefits that others have accrued from things the United States
does. So lay down the core.
So we have to ask what the core is for us. And many places may experience conflict, whether we're present or whether we're not. But those conflicts do not affect the United States' national security very much. Now, there are a few core areas in the world where the Americans need to continue to pay attention.
Name them.
And Bill and I agree. Asia is one of them, right?
That's half the world.
Of course it's half the world, but okay. There's another half that maybe we could pay less attention to. And within Asia, we need to cut new deals, right? This whole pivot to Asia thing is way more energetic than it needs to be, and we've seen the consequence, right? So the Americans make a great show of how we're going to send some Marines to Australia.
Hillary Clinton's in every country.
That's right. So what do the Australians do? They cut their defense spending. The Japanese claim to be really, really scared of the Chinese, and they're having this conflict over these stupid little islands,
mm-hmm.
right? Which somehow we're committed to defend,
yeah.
right?
Specs.
And so the Japanese announce a big increase in their defense spending. It was $1 billion. This is next to nothing, right? So we need to pursue our interests in Asia. We need to keep a watchful eye on China. We also need to be conscious of the fact that China is going to be a partner great power, and we're not going to just be able to tell them how it's going to be.
They're going to take over if we pull back. They're going to be the world hegemon.
No, they're not going to be the world hegemon. We're going to have we're moving in the direction of a multipolar world. There's not going to be a global hegemon. Now the Americans could admit this now,
and that's okay. We can come home, stick to our knitting, and better off. You're saying
you don't have a Bill thinks you have a choice, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think you really have a choice. I think the direction of change in terms of the distribution of global power is towards a multipolar world. It's slow, it's incremental, but I think it's going to happen.
The United States
needs to find a new way to pursue its interests, right, in a world in which there are several countries whose interests need to be accommodated in a serious way, not countries who are being asked not so politely to sign up and join our world, the world that we created.
Do you see any sign of this coming? Obama just gave an inaugural address. We quoted from it. It sounded like the old strategy. There's John Kerry lined up for State Department. There's Chuck Hagel lined up for the Pentagon. Do you see real evidence of this emerging?
I think there's slow, incremental adaptation in the American foreign policy and security elite to the fact that our capabilities are not what they were. And if you want to see evidence of it, just read the Financial Times and look at how much whining there is among the Europeans about what they perceive to be the direction of American change,
mm-hmm.
which is they're the first place that we're going to we have shaved and we're going to shave it more. Right? The Middle East, it's anybody's guess, but I think the president's reticence about being involved in Syria is driven by the hard-won lessons of Iraq and Afghanistan.
Bill Wahlforth, pay any price, bear any burden, or something new emerging here?
A smarter version of the strategy. Exactly as happened after Vietnam. The United States learned a lesson. Hey, we're not going to adopt quite that expansive approach to remaking the world, the Nirvana utopia stuff you mentioned at the outset of the program, mm-hmm. and instead focus on the essentials. And the essentials are maintaining those partnerships so that if things go south, you've got you've got someone to rely on. Somebody answers the phone when you call. Coming out is easy. Getting back in is a lot harder. Maintain those partnerships. Keep them going. Keep these collaborations going in order to manage and cooperate for the good of, yes, the world, but mainly the United States. Don't chuck them out the window. So I think you can see a leaner, meaner, smarter strategy that keeps the fundamentals in place.
It is exciting to live in a time when these things are being discussed. It's been a long time since we've had such a deep conversation about the roots of our global grand strategy. We're very grateful to the two of you for helping us do it. William Wahlforth at Dartmouth College, co-author of Lean Forward in Defense of American Engagement. Bill, thank you very much for being with us today.
And thank you, Tom.
And Barry Posen, professor of political science at MIT, director of the Security Studies Program there, author of Pullback, The Case for a Less Activist Foreign Policy. Check it out at our website. Barry Posen, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom. Good to be here.
You can listen to great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Won't you please come to Chicago just to sing? In a land that's known as freedom, how can such a thing be fair? Won't you please come to Chicago for the help that we can bring? We can change the world.
Show me a prison. Show me a jail. Show me a prison man whose face is growing pale. And I'll show you a young man with many reasons why. And there but for fortune may go you or I. Show me an alley. Show me a train. Show me a hobo who sleeps out in the rain. And I'll show you a young man with many reasons why. And there but for fortune may go you or I. Show me the whiskey that stains on the floor. Show me a drunken man as he stumbles out the door. And I'll show you a young man with many reasons why. And there but for fortune may go you or I. Show me a country where the bombs had to fall. Show me the ruins of the buildings once so tall. And I'll show you a young land with so many reasons why. And there but for fortune may go you or I, or I.
It's harder to fix something than it is to break it. It's harder to live a life than it is to take it. It's harder to think it through than to just do what you want to do with no regard for the consequences. It's harder to feed a child than it is to starve it. It's harder to stop a war than it is to start it. It's harder to see the truth than to just buy the lies they feed you. But these things have their consequences. It's harder to stand on feet than it is to lie down. It's harder to meet them in the eye than to just stare at the ground. And it's harder to see who is the ends and who's the means if you don't think about the consequences. In the hallowed halls of power, right at this very hour, they are shaking the dice of our future. When they're through with the game that they play in our name, we'll be left to deal with the consequences. It's harder to work for peace than to go numb to the violence. Harder to keep hope alive than to just give up and step aside. But these things have their consequences. We gotta storm the halls of power right at this very hour. We gotta wake them up and make them take notice. We will not lend our strength to leaders who refuse to think of the way of the consequences. Consequences.
And now for something completely different.